fare di camino. Burde bir ses galis, ye burish tabun, anangis dutakur, imsareri kami. Sareri kami, ish vorbash jenjum. U korchum herum anangis tutakhur im sareri kami yes galisem shat herneris a verag darsats ko hayrniki Ես էր կարոտնայն լերներին, լերներին, որոնց դուք թողել եք, գետի այն ապին, գետի այն ապին, գետի այն Ես խոսքերն դու այն լերներին, լերներին, որոնց մենք թողել ենք, գետի այն ապին, գետի այն ապին, գետի այն ապին, քանի մեր վանքերում կնքում ենք մանուկներ, արևի պես ու կրակոտ աչուկներում, քանի մեր աչկերում դեռ չի մարել կարոտը, կարոտը այն, որով նայում ենք մենք հերվին, ուրեմն մենք, մի օր կգանք ձեր գիրկը դեր, մեզ սպասող լերներ, մեզ սպասող լերներ, մեզ սպասող լերներ, մեզ սպասող լերներ, մեզ սպասող լերներ, մեզ սպասող լերներ.
Բարև սիրելիներ, բարի եկածեք, դուք ունտրեք Տիկ-տակ ու Ցետրակ, ես Հետո Ղարաբեդյան։ Այսօր հատուկ հայտակիր ունենք, որ հրավիրած ենք պրոֆեսոր Թաներ Աքճամը, որ պիտի խոսենք եւ զրուցենք հայկական ցեղասպանության մասին եւ անշուշտ պիտի անդրադառնանք իր վերջին գրած գիրքին մասին։ Hello everybody, welcome. This is Հետո Ղարաբեդյան. Today we have a very special show with us. We have Professor Taner Akcam. We will be discussing with him the Armenian Genocide and of course his latest book and that he's touring on. We will talk to him and see what he has to say. Stay with us. I'm going to play one song and we're going to go straight to our talk.
Let's
Well, folks, welcome back. I'm going to give a brief biography of Mr. Akcan. He is currently professor of history at chair of Armenian Genocide Studies at Clark University in Massachusetts. He was born in Ardahan Province, Turkey in 1953, studied at the Middle East Technical University in Ankara, an internationally recognized human rights activist. He was jailed in Turkey when he was sentenced to just under 9 years, but escaped after a year. During that time, Amnesty International named him a prisoner of conscience. He received his PhD from Hanover University in 1996 and has since written numerous books dealing with Ottoman history, the Armenian Genocide, and the policies of modern Turkey. Turkish ultranationalist organizations have marked him for death. Thank you, Mr. Akcan, for taking the time from your busy schedule to come on our show and discuss some very important issues, especially with your latest book titled Young Turks, Crime Against Humanity.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to start off with, what was it like growing up in Turkey's Ardahan province, then attending university in Istanbul?
I went to university in Ankara, and growing up in Ardahan, you know, every person after his 60s describes the childhood as the paradise, the period of paradise. I think my days in village was like a paradise for me. And what else I should say? My parents both were teachers, and they gave us a great education. And my father taught me all the time to fight for social justice and for equality against any injustices. So this is where I am now.
Okay. During your history classes as a student in school, whether in college or high school, were there any mentions of Armenians or the genocide, and why?
I cannot recall. I cannot remember one single word. But later, after I became a historian, I read Turkish textbooks from 1950s, 60s, 70s. What I discovered was that there was only one paragraph, and it was approximately the following. During the war years, Armenians collaborated with Russians, and they were removed. That's it. The entire textbooks included only one paragraph. This went until 2002, and after 2002 they changed the curriculum. After all this pressure from outside, the genocide recognitions and the confirmation by different international parliaments, France and United States, Turkey compelled to do something in that direction, and they changed Turkish curriculum, and they organized mandatory teacher education programs and educated teachers to teach Turkish children and the Armenian children also how Armenian actually organized a genocide against the Turks.
And do you think this silence was part of a plan to cover up the fact of the genocide?
It was a very conscious policy. It started actually during the Lausanne negotiations, and Turkish position, denialist position, was very clear. Turkish, one of the founding members of Turkey, the second president of Turkey, İsmet İnönü, he gave a very long speech at Lausanne peace talks, and he laid the ground of today's denialist policy. And of course, the reason for the silence was that Turkey wanted to forget this past.
Okay, and if we could reflect back on the days you were growing up, how were Armenians treated back then, and how are they treated today, in today's Turkey?
There is a slight difference, of course. I would mark Hrant Dink's assassination as a turning point, and also the AKP government as another important turning point. Until late 1990s, Armenians were not on the Turkey's agenda. They were not in the horizon. You couldn't see the Armenian. The existence of Armenians was not there. And Armenians, mostly in Istanbul, 60,000, 70,000, nobody knows the exact number, they developed a sort of what I would call the survival strategy. And this was so that you have to really develop a very low profile in the society. You have to make yourself never visible, and you should really be silenced. You should never talk, for example, Armenians on the street, and you will never call your friends also in Armenian language. This is every Armenian kid in Istanbul were taught by their parents to be careful when they went outside. I would say that the Armenians in Istanbul developed a sort of a dual characters. One what they had in their homes and the other in the outside in the street. And regarding the legal stuff, the legal rights of Armenians, they were equals like the any other Turks. There was not much restrictions there, but especially regarding the foundation right of the Armenians, there were also sort of a racial policy. Armenians were not equal, Armenian foundation were not equal as any other foundations. And this all changed after 2002. The Islamist government opened the door a little bit and started giving some properties back to Armenian foundation, but persecutions and attack against individual Armenian intellectuals continued during that year because of Agos. I think Hrant Dink made a change in the existence of Armenians in Turkey. In 1996, when he started the journal Agos, his main policy was to make Armenians visible. And then, as an Armenian, he was saying actually two main things. Number one, there are Armenians in Turkey, and I'm an Armenian, I'm not a Turk, and you cannot Turkify me, and I want to stay as an Armenian. And number two, I want to live as an equal citizen of Turkey. So whatever Turks has, I would like to have the same rights, and don't try to Turkify me. And because of this policy, he was attacked and dragged from courtroom to courtroom, and he was target of ultra-nationalist extremist organizations, and the final point was his assassination. I think after his assassination, the entire picture in Turkey changed dramatically.
And how are other minorities treated in Turkey? Are they recognized as minorities? Do they have rights?
It depends what you understand from minorities. In Lausanne Agreement, Turkey acknowledged Armenians, Greeks, and Jews as minority, but not Assyrians, for example. And as minorities, the Jews, Greeks, and Armenians had certain rights to have their own schools and to teach in their mother language and so on. But the main problem was not the legal rights. If you look at the legal structure, you would say, yeah, these are minorities and they enjoy some minority rights. But if you look at everyday life, then you would see that Turkey made it really very difficult for this group to use their minority rights. For example, for an Armenian school, they consciously appointed a Turkish director and they intervened their curriculums, and they made the everyday life very difficult and miserable. And the confiscation of Armenian properties after 1936, for example, the Armenian foundations in Istanbul had a list, and they gave this list to the government in 1936, and 1974, during Cyprus invasion, Turkish government took this list in their hand and confiscated any properties that really bought after 1936, they took away, and they didn't give them back. So my understanding is that until AKP government, until the Islamist government, the main policy was that to make the life so miserable, to make the everyday life so difficult for Armenians that they should leave. Legally, you would say that everything is perfect on the paper, but on everyday life, they really made it very difficult, and most of the Armenians didn't have any other choice but to leave the country.
And what made you interested in the Armenian genocide?
I think it was a big coincidence. One coincidence was that I started working on history of torture and violence in Ottoman Empire. It was 1988, and until that moment I had no idea about Armenians and Armenian genocide. And during my readings I first encountered, as an intellectual, with Armenian massacres, especially Abdülhamit period massacres, and I thought, oh, it's an interesting topic. I never knew that. I had to work. And the second important coincidence was in the institute where I was working, there was a German lady. Her mom was Armenian from Lebanon, but she was really assimilated, and she even didn't know one single Armenian word. But she pushed me to deal with that issue. She said, it's an important topic, and as a Turk, you have to deal with. And after some troubles, I thought, yeah, let me look into it. So this is how I started.
Okay. What were some of the issues you faced when you openly acknowledged the Armenian genocide?
Hard time. There is a Turkish saying, if you have fear of iron, you should not get into the train. Demirden korkan trene binmez. So if you deal with critical issues in Turkey, you have to be ready to get some troubles. And I had already some troubles in my past. In 1970s, I was very active in the students' movement, and I knew that I would have faced with some difficulties. These were basically court cases in Turkey and systematic campaigns in Turkish press, and in cases, for example, the physical attacks also. I was attacked in 2006 in New York physically by a group of ultra-nationalists. But I would say that compared to with other intellectuals who were fighting for certain rights of minorities and Armenians, like Ragıp Zarakoğlu or like other intellectuals, and Hrant, of course, I would say that I was lucky because I was living in outside, not in Turkey. And you get used to it, this kind of threats. And you know, there is a saying in Washington, if you go to one of the monuments, I forgot now which one was it, it says freedom is not free. If you want a free and democratic country, if you want to fight for it, you have to pay some prices. And Turkish intellectuals, I count Hrant also as one of the leading intellectuals in Turkey in that regard, we had to pay a price, and I hope it will stay with that, and we will get more recognition for the cause, and I hope Turkey will recognize the Armenian genocide one day.
Well, having just said that, were there any consequences to your family? I mean, do you live in fear that something is going to happen, when at the same time to your publishers of your book?
After Hrant's assassination, the situation changed dramatically. Before that, it was always a problem. I was going to Turkey regularly, two or three times every year. And in one of my meetings with Hrant, Hrant used to say to me that, Taner, I'm not scared of court cases. I'm scared of somebody will jump up from my back and stab me or really shot me from my head. And this is what happened. And this was my feeling also in Turkey. Whenever I went to Turkey, after second or third day, you don't feel comfortable on the street walking. and you don't want, and this was again Hrant saying, he used to say, I am scared to look in the eyes of the other people, that they would recognize who I am and they would really give me a hard time. I think this time now is over because of his assassination, number one, because it brought up a huge protest and a new wave of demonstrations for the minority rights, for the rights of Armenians. And secondly, there was a criminal investigation in Turkey against those individuals who were planning these campaigns against Hrant and against other intellectuals. This is the Ergenekon court cases and trials, and more than 200 people were tried by Turkish government for the crime of organizing a plot against Turkish government, organizing a military coup d'etat, and they were punished, sentenced with high, really, sentences. And since then, I think the general climate has changed in Turkey. During 2007, 8, 9, I know that around 20 intellectuals in Turkey were under police protection against a possible assassination. And it was really a serious problem for those who were living in Turkey during that years. But after 2010, it has dramatically changed.
Okay, the government of Turkey still denies the Armenian genocide took place and even has a state-run public relations machine to continue this denial. Thus, the genocide. They even threaten them to try to intimidate other countries. How has that affected views of the people of Turkey?
Especially for Turkish democratic movement, for Turkish progressive individuals who really wanted to discuss the topic, the Armenian genocide, and really ready to face history, it was a serious problem for them. Turkish government's denial policy was one of the major reasons why a lot of intellectuals became so silenced in Turkey. They didn't talk and discuss this issue until recently. And I think it has been changing since 2010. And I personally don't think that Turkish government would change its own attitude regarding the denial. But what is obvious is they stopped this aggressive denial campaign against individuals and in the international arena also. My observation is, in the United States and anywhere else, they follow another very subtle denial policy. The new strategy is now not, no, it never happened and it's not genocide. The new strategy is, if I may put so, yeah, genocide might be one of the opinions, but there are other opinions on that topic also. So we have to teach every point of view, your point of view and our point of view. So this is the new strategy, and they try to push this strategy in North America, especially in the United States. In different universities, they are pushing now different programs that the universities should teach both sides of the story.
Okay, and what is the public opinion currently in Turkey?
It is hard to say, because there are not enough polls on that question. If you take the media landscape, you know, the newspapers and televisions, I would say that today to discuss on Armenian genocide is normality. I remember in 2005 when Turkish intellectual organized first time a conference on Armenian issue, they even didn't use the term genocide. It was a huge public event. There was a huge campaign by press, by other political parties. And today, in these years, every year, I know that there are at least 4-5 conferences in different universities, and they use genocide very openly. And not only in Istanbul, for example, Hrant Dink Foundation, along with other institutions, organized a conference on Armenian genocide in Diyarbakir, organized a conference in Mardin, and they are planning to extend this program in the other cities also. So, and in the press, in the daily newspapers, those who are very critical towards history, I think they have the overhand. My guess is, I might be wrong, and you might consider me very optimist in that regard, I would say that after Hrant's assassination, we won the psychological war. In early period, we were the underdogs. We were attacked, we were dragged from courtroom to courtroom, and we were really stigmatized as prisoner, as those who really enemies of country and so on. You can hardly read this kind of attacks against us in these days. And just opposite, the critical voices are in majority. And I think denialists overall are in a defensive position in media. But what is the attitude of the general overall public? It's hard to say. I only know that in Kurdish areas, for example, in Diyarbakir or other Kurdish areas where the Kurds really very strong politically, they openly acknowledge Armenian genocide. PKK, the Kurdish party, apologized several times for the crimes of 1915. Even in Diyarbakir, they recently erect a monument for genocide. And in other cities, it might be possible that still there is a strong nationalism, but it is not so visible at this moment.
So based on what you're saying and what we've seen happen over the last few years, can we say that Hrant Dink's assassination has changed the views of the Turkish people?
In a lot of respect, yes, I would say this, especially in big cities. We have to really limit ourselves because we don't have enough materials what is going on in other cities. But I can definitely say in Istanbul, in Izmir, in Ankara, in big cities, the main attitude of Turkish people changed because of Hrant Dink's assassination. Hrant changed, really. He brought up the secret part of Turkish people out.
And why do you think, like, the Turkish people, it took them such a tragedy, such a sad event, to wake up? Why do you think it took that? Like, for the average Turkish people, he had to see somebody get killed, assassinated, so that he would wake up?
It's really $1 million question, and it is really very hard to answer. My personal opinion is that the majority of Turkish intellectuals and those who now went on the street, they never understood the importance and gravity of facing history. I think it is not related only to Armenian genocide. Turks has a general tendency to forget towards the past, and they never... This is my humble opinion, but it needs more debate and discussion. I think they never understood the importance of acknowledgement of a historic wrongdoing. And with Hrant's assassination, they got aware of the importance of that question.
Okay, we're going to have to take a short break, and we're going to continue our talk. Stay tuned.
Sos kari, başa verenler
Okay, we are back, and we're going to continue our talk with Professor Taner Akçam. For those of you joining us, we're discussing the Armenian Genocide with the professor. Professor, we've talked until now to what has happened in the past, and let's come towards now, the present day. What do you think about all the commemorations that have taken place in Turkey recognizing the genocide over the past few years? I mean, we've seen a big change, whereas we went from you couldn't say anything about the genocide, about Armenians, to having commemorations in Turkey.
And it will continue. Every year increases the number of cities, and 2014-15 will be the same. And I know that there are different committees in Istanbul already to prepare 2015, and they are very eager to see Armenian diaspora and Armenian people in the commemorations in Istanbul. And I urge any and every Armenians to go April to Turkey and to participate in these public commemorations. It will continue. It will one of the important signals of Turkish democracy movement. I think this is one of the important changes in Turkey that we are observing, that most of the people are now slowly start to understand what Hrant was saying, namely facing history is crucial for Turkey's democratization, and those in Turkey who organizes these commemorations, they know that this is the way to get a democratic country, and this is the way to get a country that respects the human rights.
I'm sure you're familiar with the term hidden Armenians. We've heard there are over a million hidden Armenians. At some estimates, there's supposedly 5 million of them. What are the Turkish government's policies and attitudes about hidden Armenians?
I don't think that there could be any policy towards it. What should a Turkish government would do? If an Armenian comes up and says, I'm Armenian, or my grandparents were Armenian, and go to Armenian church and reconvert to Christianity, government cannot do anything in that regard and should not do anything in that regard. But an interesting development is these hidden Armenians, even though they recognize they are being Armenian, they want to stay as Muslims also. In Diyarbakir, we have now this issue, and it was really a challenge for Armenian priest and Armenian church how to treat these Armenian, because it's very difficult to distinguish Armenian identity from the religious identity, and this is something new. And how is going to develop? I think the number will increase every day. We already have different associations in Istanbul. Malatya Armenians, Dersim Armenians, Sivas Armenians, Armenian from different cities now, and hidden Armenians are coming from their hiding and establishing their own associations. This trend will continue. There will be scholarly conferences. This November, for example, there will be a conference in Istanbul. A couple of universities organizes on the question of hidden Armenians and the question of assimilation. And I hope more people comes up from their hidings and recognize their Armenian background. And this really would be another important point to change Turkish perception about themselves, because the fear of Turks or Turkish nationalists was that if Armenian comes up, this would really damage their purity, this would damage their national identity. And the more we have Armenians coming up from their hiding, the more we understand how complex this society today is, and that we still have to deal with the reminiscence of Armenian genocide.
Okay, what about the Armenian diaspora? What are your thoughts about the Armenian diaspora and what we do, what we carry out throughout the year?
If we have genocide acknowledgement debate alive today, and if it is still on the agenda, we thank these two diaspora Armenians. Their really continuous struggle for recognition was very crucial to keep the Armenian issue alive. This is something that we have to acknowledge. And I think there is a new possibility there. My humble opinion is that Armenian diaspora should try new venues. And I mean these Turkey. Until recently, the main strategy of Armenian diaspora was, or has been, to win the third party. This could be American Congress, this could be Canadian government, this could be the French. So to win the third party, so that third party pressured Turkey and Armenians get the recognition. This is an indirect way because Armenians didn't have any other choice. This is, in that sense, very understandable strategy. On the other side, diaspora considered Turkey and Turks as a monolithic bloc because they didn't know anything else but only this denialist government. We have now a new venue, a new development. This is the rising tide of Turkish civil society. My strong recommendation is, my humble opinion is, go to Turkey and get in touch with this new civil society. Armenian genocide recognition can only be achieved if diaspora Armenians and Turkish civil society unites themselves and goes in the same alliances and fight for the same issue. Recognition of Armenian genocide, it is for Armenian very important. Recognition for Armenian genocide, it's for Turkish civil society and for Turks very important. So I think Armenian diaspora should start to give more weight on Turkish civil society than on third parties.
Having just heard that, from one side you're saying go to Turkey and work with them, but yet we have a Turkish government that has imposed a blockade of Armenia's borders. What are your thoughts on that? I know it's not exactly the same thing. One has to do more with the trade, but how could we go and work with these people when they have imposed a blockade on our border?
These people are asking opening the border in Turkey. So the main goal is borders should be opened and diplomatic relations should be established. And for this purpose, you have to try to win the third parties. Of course, you have to try to win third parties so that they can pressure Turkey for opening the border and for establishment of diplomatic relations. But at the same time, there is a civil society in Turkey, and I think Turkish government is more vulnerable to its own opposition than the pressure from outside. So you have to use both channels at the same time, and those opposition in Turkey also is asking the opening of the border in Turkey with Armenia.
And why doesn't Turkey just come out and acknowledge the Armenian genocide? Do you think they're afraid that of the consequences of recognizing the crime of genocide?
It costs a lot of money. My humble opinion was at the beginning that the reason of the denial was basically a moral issue, which I still think that it is important. What I mean with moral issue is, if Turkey recognizes the Armenian genocide, Turkey should also acknowledge that an important number of its founding fathers were either murderers or thieves. And as you know, every nation has heroes and founding fathers, and every nation are very proud of their founding fathers. And if we acknowledge the Armenian genocide, we have to call an important number of our founding fathers, our heroes, as murderers and thieves. This is psychologically very difficult to make. Only a very much developed democratic country can do this. Like in the United States, you can have the founding fathers and you can really be proud of them, but at the same time in the universities you can teach your children, this is what we are doing, that the White House, for example, built by slaves, or the American founding fathers, they were at the same time organizer of the genocide against Native Americans. You can do that both. And in Turkey, this is what we are missing. But the more I worked on that issue, recently I published a Turkish book on the confiscation of Armenian properties, I came to the conclusion is I mean, even though the moral aspect plays an important role still, I think the main stumbling block for Turks is the material aspect of the recognition. They are scared to pay the compensation. And I wish that this aspect will be one of the dialogue, one of the way of to discuss between both societies, how Turkey should rectify an historic wrongdoing. Both societies should discuss this very openly with each other. This is very crucial, and I think this is the main reason why Turkey today vehemently denies the Armenian genocide. They try to maybe find a way out, and there is a third factor which we should really start consider more seriously, and I think it's a very important problem. It's the Azerbaijan. And Azerbaijan, Turkey's economic relations and Turkey's interest in Azerbaijan's energy and Azerbaijan money, I think is an important stumbling block also for recognition of Armenian genocide. Azerbaijan uses its own leverages, its own power on Turkey to deny everything.
In an interview with Today's Zaman, you talk about Turkey should acknowledge the genocide and also take steps to compensate for losses such as automatically grant Turkish nationality to Armenians with roots in the region, recognize and promote Armenian cultural heritage in Turkey, such as renovating religious, cultural and historical Armenian buildings in Turkey, return churches, buildings and fields that belong to Siskaolikos Church in the Sukurova region, organize ceremonies. But isn't this actually just putting a band-aid on the wound and avoiding the real issues?
What is the real issue?
The real issue of acknowledging genocide and returning our lands back that belong to us.
I understand. Then you mean to give the certain territories, today's Turkey, to Armenia back. I don't think that it is a realistic alternative there. You have to fight for it in a war. You can do that. We have to learn to be realistic. Look, we have a Turkey 80 million and we have an Armenian 3 million. I totally understand that Armenians claim or has a right on their historic land. But never forget that Turkey or Ottoman Empire organized a genocide and massacred around 1.5 million Armenians only not to give a certain territory to Armenians. I guess you can never take it this back without a fight with Turks again. So you have a question here, and you have the alternatives. One is, I would like to take this land back because it's now 100% Kurds and Turks living on that territory, and you can say that I will fight back and I will take this territory, and I don't know what I'm going to do with the Turks and Kurds there. Maybe I will expel them from there. I will make an ethnic cleansing because I cannot govern if the 100% were Turks and Kurds, and I have to resettle Armenians. You have to find a way. This is a very difficult way to go, and the other way is very simple: to make the boundaries meaningless and to develop really a relation between Turkey and Armenia, and to discuss the genocide compensation as a material form, in form of giving the Armenian properties back, individual properties, or paying certain amount of money, or develop some other social programs and so on. So this is how I think. I mean, I think this is also, this should be all an issue that both societies should talk and discuss, and we should come realistic solutions. Both parties should come to a realistic solution. And I understand psychologically the Armenian demand or asking their historic lands back, but it is not a realistic assumption there. You cannot take these territories from a country who organized a genocide. And of course, it's your choice. You can say that I will set up armed groups and I will fight Turks and I will develop, if necessary, I will go into war. This is also a strategy. I can't say anything to that.
But by war, we're not going to solve anything. you know, these are our lands that Turkey has taken from us. And when we talk about compensation, money is not going to solve everything. If Turkey came up today and gave us, I don't know, $100 billion to say, here, I acknowledge the Armenian genocide, here is $100 billion to you guys, but forget your lands.
Again, I can only repeat myself. Germany and France fought with each other over hundreds of years. Where should the territories, boundaries go between both countries? After fighting hundreds of years, recently they understand, they came to the conclusion, it is better to make these boundaries between these two countries meaningless. Today nobody knows where the boundary is between Germany and France, and you can ask why these people killed each other over these centuries. So I think the easiest way is to work for the prosperity of the state of Armenia and to work for peaceful relations between Armenia and Turkey and to find ways to compensate an historic losses, a historic injustices in form of different ways, not only money, there are several other ways. I give you only one example, the opening of Trabzon, for example, port for Armenian import and export. You can develop several other alternatives and that both people in the region can live in a peaceful way. Beyond this, I don't see any realistic solution. This is how I think.
Okay. To the best of my knowledge, the Treaty of Sèvres and U.S. President Woodrow Wilson's work immediately after World War I is the most accurate research and record of rightful owners of those lands. Would you agree?
I discussed this with several friends, and I don't think that this kind of legal arguments can bring anything concrete and understandable. What is the difference between Sèvres and Lausanne? Sèvres was in favor of Armenians and Kurds and the Greeks, and Lausanne is in favor of Turks. I don't see any other major difference between both agreements. They are both international agreements, and you can even argue that Turkish government never ratified the Sèvres agreement, even they sentenced to death those who signed the Sèvres agreement. And which agreement is legally, internationally more accurate than the other? I personally don't see any way positive in debating this. We should really see the existing border as it is. We should never try to change the border in the region, if it's not happens, of course, peacefully. I'm a historian. I know the Middle East, history of Middle East very well, and the Balkans. I can tell you one. All the massacres and the genocide occurred in that region because people want to play with boundaries. Please don't play with boundaries in the region. Try to develop other ways and policies that makes boundaries meaningless. Otherwise, we will experience other massacres, if not genocide, in the region. This is what's going on in Syria today.
Okay, you are currently on a book tour. You have written a new book. It's called Young Turks and Crime Against Humanity. What do you talk about in the book?
Basically, it is another story of Armenian genocide. Until recently, Turkish government claimed that it is the only Ottoman sources that can be trusted, and all other sources, British, German, American archival materials, were produced with a certain political agenda and cannot be trusted. And so then continued Turkish government arguing, based on Ottoman documents, we cannot prove, we cannot show that there was a genocidal policy of Ottoman government. With this book, I first time showed that actually based on Ottoman materials, we can prove the genocidal policy of Ottoman government also. I published more than 600 documents in that book and laid down the genocidal policy of Ottoman government based on Ottoman materials. I think this is a very crucial breakthrough, and I don't think that Turkish government had any academic argument more at this moment against the genocide claims. They don't have any other sources that they could rely on. This book is in that sense a breakthrough in academic understanding of genocide. But of course Turkey will continue to deny genocide, because it's not an issue of scholarly work, it is an issue of politics.
Yesterday you had a meeting with the Armenian Student Association, if I'm not mistaken, and how did that go?
Oh, I love these children, they are great. And we really get into it, especially in the evening. Get into it is a fantastic and incredible discussion, debate. Sometimes they discussed with each other, debated with each other, and I discussed with them. There were different opinions. It was very, very moving and stimulating discussion. It was really great. And I think this is a new generation. This is my observation. This generation doesn't have the baggage that we have. I mean the Armenians also, the elderly generation. These youngsters, they can really put a distance to the issue and themselves, and they are more flexible in thinking and more pragmatic, and I think they would really bring up the issue further. I am very hopeful with this young students, if they really get in touch with students in Turkey, because I know the people in Turkey also, you know, but the main problem is they don't know each other. If they start to know each other, really, they don't need me, and they will really move forward. This is the crucial issue. So it was great to have the opportunity to discuss with children here, with kids, yeah.
And I believe tomorrow evening you're meeting with the community. There's an open event tomorrow morning at the Armenian Community Center at 7 o'clock, and you're going to present your book there. Is this your first time meeting the community in Montreal?
No, this is, I think, my third or fourth time.
Oh, okay.
I have been here several times in 2002 or 2003, 2005, and lately 2007. I remember 2007 very vividly, because this was the date when I was detained at the airport, in Montreal airport. When I was trying to enter Montreal, somebody informed the Canadian custom officers that a terrorist is coming. This was a part of a campaign against me during that period. It was going on against Hrant also at the same time. And this was just after Hrant's assassination. And I was detained 4 hours, and only personal intervention of Canadian minister I was released, this was the last time, I think 2007, I came to Montreal. Now I'm coming again, so I'm very happy to be here.
So you know our community pretty well.
I know a lot of people. I will meet individually with some of them. I have a lot of friends. And it is really a great place, and it's really great pleasure to be in Montreal. I remember now, I was first time in Montreal in 1999, and I could not speak English at that time, and we were on a tour to show the Wall of Silence, a documentary made by a Dutch journalist. It was on the life of Vahakn Dadrian and myself. And it was a huge event here in Montreal. I remember that one also, 1999. So it's a long time.
If people would like to purchase your book, could they do it online, or they have to go to bookstores?
They can do that. I mean, in modern time, Amazon is the solution for everything. and they can buy online, they can go to bookstore, they can buy from there, and if they come to event, they will get a signed book, of course.
Nice. Okay. Can I get mine today?
Of course, the organizer will take care of it, I'm sure about it.
Nice. Well, I want to thank you, Professor, for taking time talking to us. Really appreciate it. Wish you the best of luck in your new book, and have a nice day in Montreal.
Thank you very much, and I thank you again.
Okay, folks, stay tuned. I'm going to play some songs, and we're going to continue as this concludes our live talk with Professor Akçam.
Yeah.
Սիրելիներ, ուրեմն այսպեսով ցտեսչում դիմախտեմ ցեզի հաջող շաբաթավերջը, մի անկանի մեծերնակներ հիշեցնեմ, մի մօրնակ Մոնտրեալի եւ Լավալի մեջ այսօր բանանեգան միությունը իր ժողովները գումարե, նաեւ հոգդեմպեր 19-ին հադուկ ասկային երկերով պիտի մասնակցի Էլի Բերբերյան եւ իր նվագախումբը Մոնտրեալի մեջ, ուրեմն ցերնարգի հասույթը ամբողջովին պիտի հատկացվի Լավալի մեջ զդեղվելիք հուշարձանին։ Բիդի խնդրեմ և ուզեի, որ կաչալերենք պոլորնիս, դոմցերը սուղջեն, մոդալեն են վեսպուկի վրա գտեսնակ կիները և այլն և ուրդեղեն տեկետները ռեզորվնեք։ Նաև հոգդեմպեր 26-ի հորիզոն շապատատերծի դարեգան ծերնարգը մասնակցությամբ Քարնիկ Սարգսյանին Բրլինգտոնի մեջ։ Ցտեսչուն սիրելիներ, կալ շապատ կանտիմինք, կալ հինգ շապտի կիշեր ժամը 8-ին, հյուրիս բիդալլա Հարու Չիտիլյան, կանսլ մեմբր of Montreal, սիրի կանսլմնի ընդրություններում գմասնակցի, բիդի դեսակցություն ունենանք հետը և խոսինք և զրուցենք։ Ցտեսչուն պոլորնիտ։
Oh, Andrani, se lo faci, che lo già